SBS Filipino.
I'm here with Nick Beasley from La Trobe Asia, and today we launched the Duterte Reader here in Melbourne. Good day, Nick.
Afternoon.
So you've read the book. How do you find it?
Oh, it's a fantastic set of essays. There's 19 different authors. It covers everything from polling, was Duterte inevitable? What does Duterte tell us about the Philippines? Is there such a thing as Dutertismo? And has a bit of a sort of look over the horizon as to what he might do to the Philippines. But it's a book that only looks at what came before in the first 6 months of his presidency. So everything since then is not included.
But you've been part of it through a series of talks through the last year, isn't it, on the Philippines?
Yeah, so we've held a number of events looking at the Philippines. Really, the first one was immediately after he was elected, and then we've had a number of other events kind of picking over the developments of his presidency as it's gone forward. So it's been good to watch and good to have an expert like Nicole Curato help guide us through, what's a really interesting but for some slightly worrying time in Philippines politics.
As an academic looking to the Philippines, how do you think is it progressing from previous years?
I think one of the themes in the book is that although Duterte represents in many respects a kind of big break with the past, he's this outsider, he's the first president from Mindanao, huge number of key roles in the government are held by Southerners for the first time, and yet there's a high level of kind of continuity, that we're still seeing kind of an elite politics, the promise of breaking monopolies, of trying to significantly reform the economy, to decentralize things, so to move power, not just political power, but economic power, out of Manila, producing infrastructure, all of this big stuff that is why people wanted Duterte, they wanted a break from the past. That still hasn't happened yet. And the indicators so far are not great to expect. When we look forward and think at the end of his term in office, will we see a restructuring of the Philippines economy? Based so far, probably not.
What do you think about his reactions when foreign countries, especially superpowers, ask him to tone down the way he looks at or the way he approaches the war on drugs, human rights issues? Then he seems to be very, very solid and firm in what he has to say.
Oh, yeah. I think the one thing that we've learned very swiftly is don't point the finger or don't waggle the finger at Roddy and say, you should do this, don't do that. That's completely counterproductive. That gets his reaction is colourful and strong. So what we're learning is if you, for example, if you have a human rights agenda, if you are trying to get him to tone, to sort of seriously scale back the vigilante campaign, don't do it in public, you do it in private, you do it at grassroots. So we're beginning to figure out, if that's the way you want to approach things, that you don't go and point fingers at him in public and say, you're a human rights violator, because that will, as you said, he'll double down on what he's doing. So you've got to sort of figure out new strategies. But and in that respect, he's like, a lot of strongman leaders who don't like to be embarrassed in public, who don't like to be told what to do, because then that puts them in a corner and there's no way they're going to do what you tell them to do.
In the previous years, Australia has become more and more dominant in the Philippine scene. Where do you think this relationship will go?
I think it's a relationship that has a lot of potential to it. I think both governments, and this is not just the immediate governments, but over a long period of time, have realised that there's a lot of potential to collaborate, whether it's on things like countering radical Islam, whether it's about counter-narcotics or whether it's about questions of infrastructure investment and the like, that the two countries have a lot in common, both democracies, both allies of the United States, and yet we haven't done a lot together. So I think there's been efforts to try to figure out how we can do more. And interestingly, in the Marawi conflict and what's coming after it, there's been a significant uptick in Australian interaction, not just kind of a little bit, not just aid and here's some food and here's some, but actually getting technical skills in, getting conflict resolution, and working quite collaboratively with Philippine government folk to chart a way forward, which I think is quite a positive thing, not just immediately, but it works out, presents sort of habits of cooperation and gets bits in the bureaucracy to know one another and know how to work together. So I think you're going to see more of this in the future.
More businesses are going to the Philippines as well.
Yeah, no, it's a big and growing market. I mean, I think even though critics of Duterte want to see more economic reform, it's still growing at, 6, 7, 8% per annum over the past couple of years. It's a big economy. It's a young economy. And it's a very well-educated workforce. So, you know, whatever your business, whether you're in, you know, sort of service-oriented exports or whether you're in, extractive industries that Australians do well, there's a lot of opportunities, I think, in the Philippines. The problem has always been uncertainty around things like rule of law, corruption, red tape, infrastructure. And again, that's what Duterte has promised he's going to fix. So if he can do that, you're going to see more Australian investors feel like there's that potential can be realised.
Thanks very much, Nick Beasley from La Trobe Asia.
Pleasure to be here.
Tamkilikin ang higit pang mga kwento sa inyong wika sa pamamagitan ng pagbisita sa sbs.com.au/Filipino.